You are listening to KDOX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDOX, Richland College, or the DCCD. As I speak, they're concluding. There's breaking news. You haven't been looking at a television station or news. What happened, and these are the just the bare-bones minimum details. You had some, apparently a woman with a child was driving a car in Washington, D.C., and she tried to get into the White House, was blocked, and was surrounded, and there was a police chase. And then she headed towards the Capitol. Ultimately, she was killed, even though there was apparently a two-year-old child in the car. And that's about the extent of the details so far. And I've covered a lot of, not a lot, but several of these events. And my advice to anyone is wait 24 hours, because then the details will come out. You get in the first, especially the first hour or so, you're going to get a lot of misinformation, wrong information. Rumors are rampant, and just people don't know what's happening. Typically what happens on your television networks, they will cover this story. Fox, I was looking at Fox, but CNN was the same way. They literally drop all coverage and focus on this, mainly because it was an apparent attempt to get in the White House by this woman in this car. My gut is telling me, or my intuition is telling me, that this woman had some problems. She probably was off her medication. Something apparently it was bothering her. She gets in a car and is being chased around Washington, D.C. What was really stunning is at one point she was surrounded by about half a dozen police officers, all with their weapons drawn. Yet what the woman was doing was still continue to drive off. Now, most people, if they're surrounded by cops pointing pistols at them, ready to fire, they give up. I mean, that's the rational thing to do. That's the smart thing to do. She didn't give up. She tried to run over the cops, which is an assault, and frankly, at that point, they could shoot her. Would be completely justified in doing, because you're using a vehicle, a car, to try to run over a cop. The police aren't perfectly entitled then to use deadly force. Now, they didn't, but at some point they did towards the end, because the confirmed reports was that this person was killed. And it doesn't surprise me, because if you try to gain entrance into the White House, you're asking for trouble big time, not only from the local police there, the D.C., the Metropolitan Police, but also from the Secret Service. And who knows what was going through her mind. And we'll learn more about who the person was, their background, her family background, whether or not she was being treated for anything, was she on medication. All those details will come out in the next 24 hours. The only speculation I would say is anyone that was this irrational to do what they did, and people, when they're in an agitated state and they're undergoing stress, they don't act rationally. Because like I said, if I were in a car and surrounded by six police officers all pointing guns at me, I'd raise my hand and slowly get out of the car. I would follow their directions. That's what a law-abiding citizen would do. She didn't do that. She kept on driving, and like I said, tried to run over some of these police officers in an effort to get away. She actually thought, remember, this is Washington, D.C., the Capitol, right near the White House, right near the Capitol building. The Capitol building was locked down because of a potential shooter, and I'm not surprised she ended up dead. Because today, unfortunately, in America, a lot of people try to commit suicide by attacking the police. Now, I'm not saying that's the situation here. There are just too many details we don't know, and that's the problem. Speculation on my part or any newscaster's part. I'm not a newscaster. I give you my opinions and commentary, and those are my opinions so far. You know, she was driving a very nice car. I understand it was an Infiniti. And she was being chased by the police and ultimately died. And it's too bad. If she was the mother of that child, now you have a child without a mother. And who knows what the reason is. It could have been as simple as a bad day, off their medication. And that seems strange to some people, but, and that's what I think it is, but I could be wrong, but a lot of times people are on medication. Either they don't take it and they try to cope without it, and that results in an episode that we have right today, or they are taking it and that triggers it. Because a lot of people are depressed, and I had a past show when I went over this. I'm not going to go over it today for the simple reason we don't know. Now, I'm willing to bet you within 24 hours or less, we will know a lot about this person. The details, why they were reacting this way. Why would someone try to get into the White House? A lot of details will come out. And I don't think it'll take 24 hours. I think within 12, we'll probably know most of the details. But I caution everyone, don't jump to conclusions. You're going to get a lot of misinformation. That's why you, by simply waiting, you'll know more. And that's the danger when you're covering a breaking story. Now, I'm going to change, for first-time listeners of the show, the way you listen to the Prompt Pop Show, the way most people listen to the Prompt Pop Show, remember, this is a web radio station. We broadcast over the web online, streaming it. And that's usually 4 to 5 Monday through Thursday, and then 3 to 5 on Friday. Now, we still have some unresolved issues on the schedule. Once I firm that up, I'll definitely give the hours. I'm shooting at some point in time to have a 2-hour daily show from 3 to 5 every day. We're not there yet. I'm not about ready to go to a 2-hour. But what I'm trying to get nailed down is a 4 to 5 slot Mondays through Thursdays, and then Friday 3 to 5. 3 to 5 is a solid time for Fridays, and occasionally I'll have a special edition that goes a little bit longer. But the way you listen to the Prompt Pop Show, you go to promptpops.wordpress.com. That's promptpops, promptpops.wordpress.com. And that'll take you to the companion blog for this radio show. At the very top, you will have links to all, at the very top, you'll have September shows. Whatever month we're in, what I have in the top will be, I'll have 30 daily shows at the top of the page. And then below it, you have my archives of all past shows. Now, it's really been about the second, I believe it was the second week in September that we started our daily shows. So in the future, though, once we have a month's worth of shows, which is 20 shows, they'll be at the very top and there are links to them. All you got to do is click the link. That'll pop up the broadcast. You can listen to it or you can download it. That's your choice. But below those, the top 20, if you will, you have a complete archive of all my past shows. You click on that link, and then you'll have a choice of 4 or 5 shows, depending on how many I have per link, and it gives you information as to what the shows cover. So I have a complete archive, with the one exception being the first show, which I think was lost. There's still a chance that I can recover it, but it's doubtful. So for those that are interested in all my shows, that's how you get to listen to it. And I would say 99.999% of all people that are listening are listening the podcast, either streaming it or downloading it and then listening to it at their convenience. And the reason I point this out is every segment I do, I have what I call my notes, but they're really not notes. They're references or other material that I've looked at. Not all the material, I'm selective, but some of the material I've looked at in preparing this show. I usually have a number of YouTube videos. I will have articles. I will have photographs. I will have charts, tables, information regarding the segment I'm covering. And I usually have at least one For daily shows, I at least have one segment that does that. Sometimes I have two. My aim eventually is to have three or four segments per hour. So when we get to a two-hour show, my ultimate aim is to have eight segments, and which is a reasonable amount. In the past, I've tried to limit my show to one or two topics. My Friday shows typically will have two, three, some cases four or five shows, segments of a show, mainly because it's a two-hour show. The way I'm trying to, if you will, expand my repertoire, if you will, is to have four segments an hour and on a two-hour show, that would be eight segments. And just to put in perspective, we don't have any call-ins. We're simply not equipped for call-ins. And to be perfectly honest with you, we don't have the audience to support call-ins. Because we're a college radio station, that just isn't practical. Because if you do have call-ins, you want the calls to be screened, and you need a very, very large audience to really justify that. Because even commercial radio shows, especially local, but the same thing with national shows, they have such a large audience that usually they don't have problem getting callers, especially if you're nationally syndicated. But for local shows, call-ins can be a challenge because you want good callers. You're telling your call screener, well, this is what I want to talk about today. And if the caller is not on point, namely wants to discuss something that you frankly don't want to talk about, you don't want that caller on the air. And even when the caller wants to talk about what the host or the presenter is talking about, doesn't mean he's very expressive. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and callers, sometimes you get someone that's really terrific, and that's what you want. You want somebody that, as Rush Limbaugh says, makes him look good. And that's any presenter or host of a radio talk show wants. They want very articulate people calling in and people that are going to talk about the subject that's being discussed. And for most national shows, but even local shows, that's accomplished. But you'll have periods when you might be talking about something that maybe interests you and doesn't interest your audience, or it might interest your audience, but you don't have call-ins. So we're not equipped to call-ins, so I want to point that out, nor do we run ads. And that's a challenge for anyone, which means I have to, for an hour show, I talk for an hour. And for a two-hour show, I talk for 2 hours. And typically in commercial radio, but where you have advertisement, an hour show is really 42 minutes, maybe 43 minutes on the air. So a three-hour show, you can do the math, a three-hour show on commercial radio where you have advertising and news at the top and the bottom of the hour and advertising at the quarterly hour, the typical talk show host, nationally syndicated, is about 42 minutes an hour, 126 minutes of broadcast time. So when I do a two-hour show, usually on Friday, I'm talking for almost invariably over 2 hours. I can carry a show for 2 hours. Now, what I need to do is be able to carry a daily show for 2 hours, and that's, I'm telling you my plans, that's where we're going. And I have good news. I've caught up with the post-production phase. What I do after the show, and we'll be doing from today forward, is try to get up the show that evening. Sometimes I can't do that because of, you know, I have other things planned. But my goal is always to try to have the show up, if not the day it's presented, no later than the next day. That is my goal, and I've been a little remiss in the last week or two, but that will shortly stop. And the good news is all the shows but this show are currently up, and I hope to have this show up by about 9:45, because that's when the multimedia lab on Richland College closes, and it usually takes me, for every hour on the air, up to 2 hours of post-production till I listen to the show. I'm deleting the music. I'm deleting long pauses to get it down to definitely under an hour, but to have a much tighter show and eliminate some. I don't have that much editing, but I want to listen to the show And occasionally I will cough, and we don't have a button to press. We don't have a delay. This is going over the internet live, so there's no delay. So I got to not only be interesting and entertaining and informative, I also have to make sure that what I say is appropriate. And I really don't have a problem in that regard. But it's also, like I said, it has to be entertaining. It has to be informative. Now, I tend to talk about events that are in the news, somewhat specialized in economics, politics, business-type stories. But I have to, like I led today, with what was happening in Washington, D.C. And you're going to have more complete coverage of that when you go home tonight and listen to the news, let's say, at 10 or 11 as to what happened today in Washington, D.C. And this is a national story. Whenever you have someone attempting to get access to the White House with a car, and the lady was trying to do that, she was unsuccessful, and there were several gates that she hadn't passed through. She apparently got through the first one, but after that, police surrounded her and tried to cut her off. So you're going to have much better coverage of that on your television network. I can't compete with that. I'm sitting in Dallas, Texas. I'm not in Washington, D.C., and I'm doing this really as practice so I can get on commercial radio. My objective is to have a nationally syndicated talk radio show. I think I'm confident that I have the capability of doing that, but I need practice to get better and better at it. I am getting better and better at it. I know that, but I'm still not at the level that I really want to be to do that. That said, if someone today said, Raymond, we'd like to hire you and definitely put you on nationally, I would jump at the chance. But at the same token, I know with a little more seasoning, probably a year, 2 year maximum, I'll have enough shows as well as preparation for the shows. And that's probably the most important thing. Every hour show should take at least 3 to 5 hours of presenter's time. Now, as you get good at it, you can cut the hours down where you might only need an hour or two per hour of the show. But I try to at least prepare 3, 4, or 5 hours. Sometimes I can do that. Sometimes I can't because I have other things going on. But that is key to really being successful because you got to fill out. I have an hour's time. I got to fill that with content that is interesting. Now, there's one thing that caught. I was reading one of the things I do, as well as other people in talk radio do, is we look at the Drudge Report for see what is the breaking news. And obviously what was going on in Washington was breaking news. It was on the Drudge Report. It was on Fox. It was on CNN. It was on all your networks. So that's why I led with it, because that is the story that people are talking about today. And I've given you my comments and my speculation, because we know very, very little. But within the next 12 hours, definitely within the next 24, we'll know a lot more. And when that happens, I'll probably on my Friday show, which my Friday show is a wrap-up show, where I review the week as well as what I think will be the stories of the coming weeks. And I'm somewhat anticipating that today. And I've mentioned this before, but something that got my attention on the Drudge Report. And I think I'm rather a little bit incensed about this. We have a Secretary of the Treasury that was nominated in January. I believe he was confirmed several months later. Secretary of the Treasury Jacob Blue, or Jake or Jack. I've heard him called several names, first names. But his name is Jacob Blue. And he took over from Timothy Geithner, that was the outgoing Secretary of the Treasury, that was President Obama's first cabinet appointment, and served the entire 4 years. Well, not the entire, but nearly the entire 4 years. Now, I'm not going to get into whether or not you think Secretary Timothy Geithner was a good secretary or not. President Obama obviously thinks he'll go down as one of the greatest Treasury secretaries. I really don't think so. But the current secretary, I'm really having problems with. I don't like people scaring people. I like people that are upfront, honest, And don't lie to the American people. Now, just for background, Mr. Liu was first budget director for President Obama. Then he got promoted, promoted is the right word. He was promoted to President Obama's chief of staff and then selected to be his Secretary of the Treasury. Now, the Secretary of Treasury position is a very, very important position. I would say it's kind of the three most important cabinet positions are Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Defense, and Secretary of State. Now, some would argue also Attorney General. I'm not going to argue which is the most important. That's not why I'm commenting. But the key point I'm trying to make is Secretary of Treasury is a very, very important position. And you want someone that truly understands financial markets. You have someone that also understands taxes as well as spending. Now, I will give credit to Mr. Liu. He understands part of the fiscal problem. Namely, being budget director, and not only for President Obama, for former President Clinton, he has experience in that. Whether you think he was a good director of the budget is not the point. He does have that experience. He did also work on Wall Street. Namely, he was chief operating officer for Citibank. The problem is the unit that he was responsible for losing a lot of money. And he's very vague in his confirmation hearing. And I agree with Senator Hatch. He wasn't really forthcoming. He was trying to stall the administration. I don't know why. President Obama is appointing someone of a major bank that failed, that required a bailout. And I'm against bailouts. I believe when a bank fails, it fails. I don't believe in this too big to fail argument. And the reason I say that, when a business fails today, and every day there are businesses failing in the United States, that's the first thing you need to keep in mind. Yes, there are successful companies that grow and grow and grow and hire and hire and hire more and more people. But there are also companies that get very big and fail. And they usually fail because of mismanagement, namely taking on risk and taking on leverage, which is borrowing money to make money. You see, it's very, very tempting, especially where interest rates are very low, for financial institutions such as Citibank to borrow the money cheaply and invest it and use leverage to do that because the returns are huge. But it works both ways. Whatever your investments are and whatever your strategy is, where you're using leverage, you're magnifying both the profits and the losses. And Citibank's lost big time. And who was chief operating officer? Our current Secretary of the Treasury. He is a Washington insider. He worked for Speaker Tip O'Neill. He's been basically a lawyer and a political operative, you know, on the staffs, both in Congress and in several administrations. He's a political animal, and he obviously has his supporters. Never met the man, don't particularly want to, but what's really key in this situation is you want a Secretary of the Treasury that's honest with the American people. And he's not honest. And why do I say that? And I think he's frankly lying and misleading the American people and giving him pure propaganda. Now, some propaganda can be true, some propaganda is false. In this case, it's false. Because what Secretary Liu is doing is trying to scare really ignorant people, people that really do not know the financial sector, do not know the financial markets. See, initially I said, well, maybe he just doesn't understand what he's saying. But I quickly dismiss that because anyone in his position, in this position, has advisors that can explain it to him. So even if the gentleman is slow or ignorant of what he's saying, he has people on his staff that should explain the reality to him. Now, what am I getting at? He's trying to say that if the national debt ceiling is not raised, that the United States government is going to default on its treasury security. That is pure rubbish. It's nonsense. No one that follows this would ever say that. Now, we do have a long-range problem in that regard. I'm not saying the United States will never default. I'm not saying that. But if you've listened to past shows, and especially to the last one, I made a point, and I'm emphasizing it here. The Treasury, the Department of Treasury, which Jacob Lew heads, puts out a monthly report called the Monthly Treasury Statement, the MTS. You can Google it and get it. As a matter of fact, I didn't put at the very top, but I'm going to the last edition. Now, this comes out monthly, and it's a long report. I usually look at the first several tables. The most important tables is Table 1. And what this does, it gives you, by month, how much the United States government in total has collected in tax revenue. And that is it's going to vary from month to month. And I'll be the first one to say it is somewhat difficult to predict what that will be, because it depends on how business is going. If business is expanding and growing and people are earning money, guess what? Tax revenues flow in, not only from income taxes, but also from Social Security taxes, payroll taxes. But you have total tax revenues from all sources. And you get that month to month to month. Recently, and it's going to vary from not only month to month, but year to year. But currently, for the last 12 months, it's been running a little over $200 billion. Let me say that again. Over $200 billion in taxes coming in. Fine. What's the problem? The problem is we have too much federal spending. Government spending, federal spending, is simply out of control. Now, we won't know the exact numbers until October 10th at the earliest, but spending, and I'm trying to keep it simple here, spending monthly is averaging around $300 billion. Do you see the problem? We're collecting a little over $200 billion. We're spending a little over $300 billion. So you have what's called a deficit of approximately $100 billion a month. For this fiscal year that ended Monday, September 30th, it'll probably be a little under that. We won't know until the eighth business day of October, which is October 10th, when that's the scheduled date for the next issue of the monthly Treasury statement that you can get online. Just Google Treasury Department MTS statement or report, and you'll get it. You'll get a link to it. You click on it, the report, and then you'll select which format you want. You can get it in PDF, or you can get it in plain text. And I recommend you look at it. I'm just really hitting the first table. There's a lot of information in that report because it gives you spending by departments, by programs. It gives you both on budget and off budget, which I'm not going to get into, but it gives you all the details. Because a Secretary of the Treasury, like in the business world, they manage the money, the cash. They got to make sure the checks are issued and the bills are paid. Now, there are departments that actually implement that, but the money flows from the taxpayers, and keep that in mind, from the taxpayers to the Treasury, and then from the Treasury to the various departments. But the problem today, in kind of the big picture, is roughly taxes only cover approximately two-thirds of the spending. How is the remaining one-third, and actually I think it's a little bit more than a third, how is that paid for? Well, the government doesn't have a credit card, but it has the capability, and they use it every day in auctions, the Treasury auctions, to raise money, and by selling Treasury bills, notes, and bonds. which the difference between those three types of securities is the length to maturity, where Treasury bills are short-term and Treasury bonds are long-term, like 30-year Treasury bonds. It's the Treasury's responsibility to pay the interest, on outstanding Treasury securities. Now, in total, through the last fiscal year, and again, this is from not from the Treasury statement, but if you put in Department of Treasury interest on the debt, there's another report that the Treasury comes out with monthly. What's the interest that the government has paid and for the year? And for the fiscal year ending September 30th, it's approximately $395 billion was the interest they paid. That's not my number. That's the Department of Treasury. And last show, I have those statistics and a link to it. Now, if you divide that $395 billion by 12, you'll get approximately $33 billion. Is that right? Okay, 33 times 10 is 330. And then 2 times... Yeah, it's right. But I'm going to use a round number. Let's assume for... And it has been going up, up, and up. So in round numbers, every month in the near future, the Treasury Department has to pay interest of approximately $35 billion. Probably a little less, but in that range. So let me summarize. Every month, the Treasury Department is getting around $200 billion in revenue. And that number will vary as the economy either grows or expands, if you will, or whether it contracts or goes into a recession. And it's going to vary from month to month. But on average, recently, for this last fiscal year, it's been around $200 billion. You can go to the monthly Treasury statement report and you'll see the actual numbers, and they jump around. Some months they're going to be less, some months they're going to be a lot more, but on average about $200 billion. And on average the interest is less than $35 billion. So we have incoming revenue from taxes that more than cover the interest due on the Treasury securities. When you're a country, the leading economic country of the world in terms of the size of the economy, the prosperity of the economy, and the size of the Treasury debt outstanding, the absolutely last thing the United States government will be doing, at least in the near term, is defaulting on that debt. And all defaulting means, technically, is you don't pay the interest when it comes due. In this case, comes due on either Treasury securities, such as bills, notes, and bonds. Are you following me? So we have interest covered by between 5 and 6 times. You know, multiply $33 billion times 6, you're under $200 billion. We have more than enough tax revenue coming in to pay the interest. And the number one category of expenses or spending that the Treasury has to pay every month is the interest on the debt. Just like most people, one of the if they're trying to finance, let's say they're in the same situation, they're living beyond their means. Let's say they're bringing in $3,000 a month and spending $5,000. The only way they can do that is borrow money, and usually Americans, that's credit cards. Or it could be a loan, but that's typically what's going on. And if you're doing that, what do you pay every month? You pay at least the minimum required for the credit card. Because you want to be able to use the debt that you're incurring, and the banks will cut you off if you don't pay your interest, don't pay your bills. And that's the same situation even with the United States government. The people that invest in Treasury securities, and there are literally hundreds if not millions of investors that do that, and it's really millions. And it's largely, though, financial institutions as well as nations, central banks of nations. And I have a lot of that information on the last, if you go to the second segment of the last show, I have that information. I'm not going to repeat it here. What I'm really zeroing in on, because I'm getting more than annoyed, I think this is pure propaganda that Mr. Liu is spewing. He's really confusing the situation. He's scaring the ignorant, because anyone that's financially sophisticated laughs at Mr. Liu. Laughs. He's a joke to say this. And in fact, he shouldn't be saying it, because it raises unnecessary fears amongst people, not only in the United States, but abroad. It's nuts for him to say what he's saying. And guess what? The president is saying the same nonsense. Both of them should know better. Really, they should know better. And they need to be called on the carpet for it. They need to be challenged. There are people doing it, and I'm doing it here. But you need to understand some key facts, one being the United States government every month is getting tax revenues. And over the for last year, it'll be over $2.6 trillion. That's $2,600 trillion. The exact number I'll know in a week, hopefully. That's a lot of money. And on a monthly basis, that's about $200 billion. And again, it's going to fluctuate. You only have to pay interest of less than 35. You have more than enough tax money to pay the interest. And that's important, because if you, a default, a technical default, is when, in this case, the United States government, the U.S. Treasury Department, does not pay the interest due on Treasury securities. That would be a default. And that would, a default of the United States Treasury security, that would be, that would, and here's where I agree with him, but I wouldn't, what he's saying, this would cause, if we default, that would cause a great recession. I agree with you, but it's not going to happen, and he knows it. I don't know why he's saying this other, well, I have my suspicions. He is truly trying to scare people. I think this is irresponsible. I think he should be called on the carpet. And what I'm saying is, where's the adult supervision here? This is irresponsible for a Secretary of the Treasury, as well as for a President of the United States, to go on national television or write articles where reporters are interviewing him saying this. It's irresponsible. It shouldn't be done. Now, people that are financially sophisticated, that understand financial markets, that understand investments, that understand Treasury securities, know that what Mr. Liu and the President of the United States are saying is sheer, utter rubbish. It's nonsense. It's propaganda. It's scare tactics. It's fear-mongering. It's fear-mongering. We're going to default. And the problem is, the media is echoing this nonsense. And a lot of the problem is, you have newscasters that are ignorant. They don't understand economics. They don't understand financial markets. All they're doing is echoing what the Treasury Secretary says and the President says, not understanding it is pure, unadulterated garbage. It's propaganda. Propaganda. It's a lie, folks. And we have a president that is an habitual liar. Fully expected from the president. I don't expect it from the Secretary of the Treasury, unless he's a political operative or animal, and that's exactly what he is. That's why he got nominated. And he's confusing a lot of people, because what happens? The television networks repeat this nonsense, and some people get scared about this. And it is nonsense. It is nonsense. Now, is it possible at some future point in time that the United States would default? Absolutely. Governments have defaulted on their debt throughout history, including the United States, including many of the states in this union, including many countries of the world. Government defaults on debt are not new. I will agree that that could happen. And guess what? If we don't see some leadership out of Washington, and I'm not very optimistic here, the United States at some future date will default. And there's two ways of defaulting. One is the technical default where you don't pay the interest. That I doubt the United States would do, very much doubt it. But there's another way of defaulting, and this is very important. You pay what you pay back in interest has significantly less value in terms of purchasing power. In other words, what the United States is doing in conjunction with the Federal Reserve, which is the United States' central bank, is they're creating the erosion of the value of the dollar. They're debasing or devaluing the value of the dollar. And what that means is the dollars you have in your wallet over time are worth less, less, and less. And remember, many of these treasury securities are intermediate or long term, 10 year, 30 year. So the payments of interest are over a long period of time. So what happens over that long period of time if the Treasury, in conjunction with the Federal Reserve, gradually depreciates the value or debases the value of the U.S. currency? And that you see in inflation. The expansion of the money supply together with credit, one of the consequences of that is a general rise in the price level, which means the purchasing power of the money that you have in your wallet goes down, down, and down. Now, you don't notice it when inflation is running 1 or 2 or even 3%. You definitely begin to notice it when it goes over 5, 10, or 15%. Now, we're not there yet. The operative word there is yet. But anyone that lived through the 70s and early 80s will remember we had double-digit increases in inflation as well as double-digit rates, interest rates for treasuries. I can remember when the prime hit, I believe, double digits, and mortgage rates were 13, 14%. They're not there now, but we're getting there. And why do I say that? What's happened over the last 5 years? We've run these massive deficits. And here's the problem, and you see the problem. For every dollar that the United States is spending today, about a third to 35% has to be financed. And the way to think about it, if you're bringing in $2.6 trillion in tax revenues, but you're spending 3.5, 3.6, you have what's called a deficit. And you have to fund the deficit by issuing Treasury security. You don't have a credit card, so what the government does, what the Department of Treasury does, is issues debt. And as the size of the debt gets bigger, and it is getting bigger, it will hit over $17 trillion sometime this month. And I have at the very top the U.S. debt clock. That gives you a rough idea what it is. But if you want to get the details, again, go to the monthly Treasury statement. You can, and we've been over the debt. We are technically over the ceiling right now. That's happened back in May. You hear a somewhat of a sense of panic by the Treasury Secretary that we're going to run out of money come 17 October. We're only going to have $50 billion of cash left. Two things he's not telling you. One, actually several things he's not telling you. I don't doubt it. At some point in time on October 17th, we'll only have $50 billion. But what every month happens is tax revenues come into the Treasury Department. Every month. And every day, the Treasury has been issuing securities. Now, they're up against, actually, they've exceeded. There's some gimmicks being played. I'm not going to go there. But here's the key thing. He needs to finance roughly a third of the spending. He's at the legal limits. Actually, he's above, but let's keep it simple. He's at the limit. And what Congress is saying is, yeah, we'll entertain increasing the debt ceiling. I'm not for it. Let me be crystal clear. I'm for a balanced budget. I've definitely living within the means of the American people. And this year after year of these massive deficits have to stop. And the reason why I'm so adamant about it is if you do not, the United States government will default. Because what is the Fed doing? It's manipulating the cost of money, the interest rate. And you can see that in the federal funds rate. Since December of 2008, the federal funds rate has been at 25 basis points, near zero, for all practical purposes, zero. This is a command and control. This is what I call legacy economics. It's a command and control attitude that a major segment of the United States economy, namely the financial sector, that we need a committee of PhD economists, the Federal Reserve Board, to determine what the interest rate should be. Nonsense. Markets are perfectly capable of doing that. And when you get a small committee like this, I'm not saying they're not intelligent. I'm not saying they're not good intention. I am saying they're misguided in their economic policies because they have suppressed and manipulated that interest rate and kept it at that low level. Now, why, you might ask? It's very simple. They're in cahoots with the Department of Treasury to keep the cost of financing these deficits as low as possible. That's one of the there's several reasons to do that, but that's one of the major reasons. What the Fed is doing is enabling these massive deficits year after year after year after year. I am adamantly opposed to quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3. All that is some will say they're printing the money. Technically, they don't print it. But they do create money by sitting at a keyboard, punching in numbers, and when they want to pay for a treasury security, that's what they do. They issue a note, a Federal Reserve note. A note is a debt, is debt. That's your money, folks. So what does the Department of Treasury do when they get this note? And it's really a note. All they're doing is writing a number in a database. Some people call this counterfeiting. They are creating money. The money in the United States is a debt based money. That's the way it's been since the Federal Reserve has been established. I'm not going to get in. There's several related topics that I should get into, but I literally don't have time to get into. But I'm adamant that we need to have honesty and truth and not scare people. Here's why I have some mixed emotions of what the Treasury Secretary is saying. I will agree in the long run, if we do not rein in government spending and dramatically reduce the debt, the United States is going to be in for hard times. Standard of livings are going to have to go down because what is going to happen is the interest rate on a couple of things. The interest rate will go up as the Federal Reserve as inflation picks up, the Federal Reserve, as any central bank, will have to have a tight money supply, which means they will raise the interest rates. We're not there yet, but it's going to happen. And when that happens, what happens to the interest on the national debt? It's going to go up, up, and up. And the best way to think of it is the United States budget is a big pie. The federal budget is a big pie. Today, about 6% of that pie, kind of a sliver, is for interest. But as the national debt goes up, and it's going up, up, and up, remember, we're raising the ceiling, or about to raise the ceiling, and as the interest rate goes up, two things are working. The debt is going up, up, and up as we run these deficits, and so will the interest rates, because they're right now being manipulated. There's no way that the interest rate should have been this low for this long. Financially sophisticated people understand that. the yields or the interest rate that the Treasury should be paying are 2 to 3% higher. And they're going to go up. What's going to happen is this. The bond market is going to crash as interest rates go up, including Treasury bonds, which means anyone, when the Treasury wants to borrow in the future, it's going to have to pay higher interest rates. The game that's being played right now is the Treasury has been a major supplier, really the first lender, not the last, not a lender of last resort, a lender of first resort to the federal government. Now, they can't technically buy it directly from the Treasury Department. Either they buy it from member banks that are told to buy the Treasury securities and we'll buy them from you, or they go to the primary dealers in these securities. That's the games that are being played. But that's a detail, folks. The important thing to remember is the Fed is financing the U.S. government and the Treasury by buying these securities. And more of the auctions, the major buyer by far is ultimately, when you cut through all the games they're playing, is the Treasury, not the Treasury, is the Federal Reserve, is the central bank. They are enabling this financial irresponsibility of these massive deficits. For five fiscal years, the average deficit, and this is totally unprecedented in the entire history of the United States. There's nothing that comes close to this. For five fiscal years, the deficit, the average, is over $1.1 trillion. That's $1,100 billion. 5 years, every year, over $1 trillion. The average over 5 years is over 1.1. Yes, this year it might be $900 billion. A slight improvement. I won't deny that. The trend is down. But there's no sense of urgency on either political party. Forget about the Democratic Party. And that is the problem of Mr. Liu's appointment. He's a political animal. That's why he has this position. He's going to do the will of the president. And unfortunately, what that means is year in, year out, we're going to have these massive deficits. I'm making a bet today that when President Obama leaves office after four more years, he will rack up somewhere in the range of $8 trillion to $10 trillion of deficits. $8 to $10 trillion of deficits. That's unheard of. That is totally financially irresponsible. There is no leadership on the part of the White House to cut government spending. If anything, they want to increase it. They want to increase spending and increase taxes. And that will cripple the United States. That will lead to persistently higher and higher unemployment rates. This is damaging, folks. That's why it's important, and you need honesty as to what's happening, and you're not getting it from either the Secretary of the Treasury or the President of the United States. They're trying to scare you with pure propaganda that the United States government is going to default on its debt. Absolutely not. Not in the short term. Long term, yes, that's a possibility. But when we're bringing in over $200 billion a month in taxes, we have more than enough money to pay the interest, which is less than $35 billion. And so I don't know where Secretary Liu gets his numbers from. I'm getting them from his own Treasury Department. They're not my numbers. His own Treasury Department, the U.S. government's numbers. Yet he's trying to panic you into thinking that the U.S. government is going to default. Don't believe it, and don't believe the newscasters that really just echo these statements. This is scaremongering. If the United States actually defaulted, yes, we'd be in another depression. I would agree with them there, but it's not going to happen. I think what he's trying to do is shift the blame from the Democratic Party and their failed economic policies to the Republicans and try to blame it on the Republicans for not increasing the debt ceiling. That's nonsense. And let me just, one point that I mentioned last show, I'll mention again. The way it's set up now, our money is debt-based. It doesn't have to be. The Treasury Department can print money. Not recommending it. I think it was would be a terrible idea. But if push comes to shove, if they truly couldn't pay it, that's what they could do. Absolutely a terrible idea. They're not going to do it. What they're going to do is continue exactly what the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department are doing. They're financing those deficits by issuing securities, and the Federal Reserve is buying it. My time is up. I hope you enjoy this show, more education than entertainment. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Tomorrow will be my regular 3 to 5 show. It'll probably be a special edition where I go a little bit longer. We'll see. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.